Charles Woodson, Desmond Howard, Denard Robinson, Timanga Biakabatuka, from Yost to Harbaugh, passed down from generation to generation, Michigan football has stood the test of time. What's that feeling you get when you catch your first glimpse of the big house? When you hear, "And take the field." When you see the team emerge from the tunnel, sprint across the field, and touch that famed M-Go Blue banner. Saturdays in the fall, tailgates with friends and family, favorite players, favorite teams, and unforgettable moments. A lifetime of memories. College football in 2020 may be unique, but it has arrived at the corner of Stadium and Main, which is where you can find Michael Spath and Justin Rowe sharing their analysis, their stories, and their emotions about this year's Wolverine. This is the Stadium and Main podcast, presented by Kapnick Insurance Group, Wolverine State Brewing Company, and Lewis Jewelers.
Welcome to the Stadium and Main podcast. I am Justin Rowe, and I am joined here by Michael Spath. It is November 12th, Wisconsin week for Michigan football. Mike, how you doing out there?
You know, I'm doing well, Justin. I will say the one interesting thing, and we discussed this last week a little bit as we got to the Thursday podcast, is, you know, there was some excitement growing for the Michigan-Indiana game. A lot of the, you know, the questions coming off the Michigan State game, I was curious to see how Michigan answered them. And I don't know about you, but, like, I'm slightly – my focus is not quite there. I think that's probably pretty – common among Michigan fans is you know, what is this rest of the season going to be about? Like, this, if there's going to be any level of excitement that gets recaptured for this 2020 season, then they've got to go out there and beat Wisconsin this weekend. If they don't, and they're staring at a 1-3 start, you know, then like us, which we're going to do the second half of today's podcast, we're going to shift almost entirely to looking at the Michigan basketball team, Justin.
Yeah, and thankfully, Juwan Howard has made a splash. I think for a lot of Michigan fans out there who have, I don't want to say tuned out, but they've struggled to have their whole heart into Michigan football at this point. Juwan Howard came in with a splash at the right time here. So definitely with those two five-stars committing, Musa Diabate and Caleb Houston, in the last couple of weeks. And then having those guys sign was a big deal. So we'll talk about that in the later in this podcast. But let's get into this week with Michigan versus Wisconsin. Last year versus Wisconsin, it did not go well for the Wolverines in Madison. No. They got down to a 35-0 start. It was that was a pretty big game, and Michigan was in a position to you know, if they win that football game, they're in a good spot in the Big Ten race. And so they came out about as flat as ever. So you know, Jonathan Taylor ran all over them. Now, do you see this year as Dom Brown's revenge game against that, against the Badgers? Because I know we've done the revenge tour before, and it didn't work out for Michigan in the end of the year. It worked out for the whole middle of the year. But, do you see him making you know, he's had the comments before, oh, yeah, I don't sleep at night because I'm thinking about the teams that beat us pretty bad, especially Ohio State, but Wisconsin's been on that list. Is this just another game, as a lot of the coaches put it?
Well, you know, he has had success in these you know, revenge games in the past, with the exception of Ohio State. Ohio State in 2018 put up 62. Then last year, obviously, put up in the 50s and beat them pretty handedly again. But if you go back and look at, you know, the 2017 season, when he lost to Wisconsin and Penn State in poor fashion, they came back the next year and were a lot stronger. And the one thing that I look at, like, this game, well, there's two parts of his defense that Wisconsin could take advantage of, and why I resist the idea that this is a revenge game is A year ago when Michigan, you know, what did they give up? 450 yards rushing to Wisconsin, and I think more than 200 to Jonathan Taylor. They were extremely vulnerable in the middle of the defense. Their two tackles, Carlo Kemp and Michael Dwumfor at the time, and Ben Mason was in there, right? Now Ben Mason, thankfully, is back at the fullback, halfback, or H-back position. But they were so weak up the middle. Their linebackers, Josh Ross, got hurt. We saw Jordan Anthony, I believe, was the guy who stepped in and is now transferred. You did start to see a little bit of Cam McGrone, but that was his first real extended playing time. Those guys were out of position. The safeties were out of position. They gave up big plays in the running game. You know, I look at it, the linebackers are stout, more stout than they were a year ago, with Cam McGrone and Josh Ross having that experience. But the middle of the defense, the Carlo Kemp, and whether it's Donovan Jeter in there or you know, Julius Welshoff in there, or a little bit of, you know, we've seen some Chris Hinton too. Those guys have not played very well in the first three games. And so, you know, I'm hesitant to say like, well, Don Brown will get even, because Wisconsin, if they decide to, and they didn't in week one, and we don't really know what they would have been in week two or week three, because those games were canceled. If they really want to get after Michigan's interior, I think they probably have a pretty good opportunity to do so. The second part of that is, you know, Graham Mertz, who had an outstanding week, week one against Illinois, what was he, 20 of 21, I think, and for 400 yards and five touchdown passes, the type of passing numbers that Wisconsin rarely puts up. But if he's back, and I think everybody kind of expects him to be, even though he's just going to start practicing today, you know, I believe that the expectation on a Madison is that Graham Mertz will be the starting quarterback come Saturday night. You know, if he can find some rhythm again pretty quickly, I mean, Michigan's secondary is a gigantic weakness. So the two areas that Wisconsin can exploit and are probably best prepared to exploit are the two biggest vulnerabilities for this Michigan defense. So, no, I don't see it as a revenge game. I don't think Don Brown has the horses. And right now, everybody is down on Don Brown and his ability to make adjustments or, you know, come up with some defense. So I think this is again a game where, similar to last week, where it's not going to be about the defense holding Wisconsin to 24 points. It's going to be a game that's all about the offense. Don't you think, Justin?
Yeah, definitely. And like you said, this isn't your typical Wisconsin team that's going to run for 450 yards. They don't have a Jonathan Taylor. They still have a great offensive line, that's for sure. But they showed it, and it's hard to say against one game against Illinois, who is probably the worst team in the Big Ten. So it's hard to evaluate Wisconsin here after just seeing them in that one game, but. They came out and threw the ball, and Graham Mertz looks like a guy that can throw the ball very well. And so this is a different team, and I expect them to do exactly what Michigan State and Indiana did. They're gonna challenge those corners. And so I do think it could be a long day for Michigan's defense. Like you said, if those middle defensive linemen can't get any pressure, and if they can't stop the run, then Michigan's gonna feel like they can't stop anything. So I did want to ask you too, because we've talked a lot about Don Brown, but we haven't talked a whole lot about Sean Nua, the Michigan's defensive line coach. And so where do you see him right now as a coach, as a recruiter, and even going into this game now, what's he thinking about? What is his game plan against a Wisconsin team who has been dominant in the run in the past?
Well, you know, I do think that Sean Nua has certainly come under the fire a little bit here from Michigan fans, and the media is paying attention to it. He replaced Greg Madison, and, you know, I always scoff a little bit when I understand that people were ticked that Greg Madison left for Ohio State, but immediately this is what happens, and this is what happens in life, it happens in politics, it happens in everything that we do. We as, you know, as tribes, as identifying with one particular institution or university or whatever it is, start like dismissing who that guy was and what he was, what his value was to a program. And Greg Madison was a great defensive line coach, and Sean Nua was tabbed as a rising star. And so far, you know, is it because he hasn't had the right players, or is it because he's not getting the most out of those players? I mean, you know, you've got to, they're only sophomores. Mozzie Smith and Chris Hinton are only sophomores, but these are the two big dogs that need to be the future and need to be the foundation of Michigan's defensive line. And the fact that we're not really seeing Mozzie Smith at all, and the fact that Chris Hinton is playing about 30-40% of the snaps, but you know, can you tell me in the first three games, have you seen Chris Hinton make a play? I haven't, and that's not a knock on the kid, because I really like the kid. I think he has mass potential, but I mean, he hasn't done anything in there. And so where does that fall? Is that on the defensive coordinator? Is that on the defensive line coach for developing those guys? And so, yeah, I think Sean New is under the gun here a little bit. I mean, he's got to get a lot more out of this front four. And now Aiden Hutchinson is out for the year. Kwity Paye is playing outstanding football. You know, and I think Pro Football Focus, I think your secondary Twitter, your Blue by 90, retweeted either it was Pro Football Focus or another scout in the NFL that said Kwity Paye's leading the country right now with 25 quarterback pressures. I mean, 25 quarterback pressures in three games is an insane number. And I know he doesn't have a big sack totals yet, but a lot of that is because when you get in quarterback pressure and the secondary can't hold up for 3 or 4 seconds, that quarterback can just unleash the football and get it out there. So he would have bigger sack numbers if the secondary was playing better. But to your point, Justin, I know I kind of digressed and rambled a little bit there, but yeah, I mean, I think Sean Nua is completely responsible for the play of this defensive line. And, you know, you look at the linebackers, I mean, you know, have we really seen Cam McGrone play that well yet? Have we really seen Josh Ross? Michael Barrett had an outstanding week one. It's been a little banged up, but tell me on this defense, who is playing well other than Kwity Paye consistently?
I mean, the only other guy that I can think of is Dax Hill. And he has been the only, you know, little piece of tape holding that secondary together, trying to basically do it all on his own. And so when you only have two guys that are standouts on a defense like this, that in a year 2020 where offenses are now putting the pressure on and throwing the football and all that, it doesn't bode well for a defense. And so that's why I think that the, you know, we've talked about the coaching, the schemes and all that stuff, but it is a little bit, it has to be on the players at some point too. So the talent level and the development and just all these guys not playing very well is also very apparent too. And I actually, we talked about it with Brandon Brown yesterday on Blue by 92. This is a case of, if you look back on the 2018 recruiting cycle for Michigan, that's where Jamon Green and Vincent Gray and Cam McGrone and some of these guys come in. And those, a lot of those guys were not 4 or 5 star guys, and so it was a class that was, I think, ranked 22nd in the nation, instead of where Michigan pretty much every other class under Harbaugh has been a top 10 class. So there is something to say about this defense and about that class and the talent level that's on the field. We're seeing 3 star talent on the field where we're used to seeing 4 and 5 star talent. So I think the drop off is significant, and it's tough for Michigan fans to go, you know, to watch that and realize you're just expecting to have the guys that can do it all the time, right? And for the coaching staff to use those guys in the right way. And I think that Don Brown was doing the exact same thing that he's done in the past, but when you don't have the talent at the cornerback level position, then it just doesn't go well.
It's interesting you mentioned that class real quick, Justin, because you do have a lot of players from that, you know, that's the Aiden Hutchinson class. So what was that? The 2018 class, I believe.
Yeah. Yep.
Who are in, you know, key positions right now, playing quite a bit. And it was the lowest ranked class that Jim Harbaugh had. And, you know, and Julius Welshoff and Taylor Upshaw, a couple of defensive linemen that were, you know, I don't want to like automatically downgrade every 3 star, but you had a lot of guys who were considered projects in that class. And now those guys are playing quite a bit, as you mentioned, Vincent Gray and Jamon Green, and, you know, Sammy Fawcett is a backup safety. Yep. that they were expecting to see. And what you're also seeing is a lot of guys from the freshman class and last year's class that were more highly regarded. Someone like Makari Page, who has been the third safety in the game for Michigan, getting some run. And one of the things that, you know, we've been told is that some of the younger players, maybe a Jalen Perry, maybe a DJ Turner, some of those, you know, higher end cornerbacks that Michigan recruited a year ago could see some more playing time this weekend. You know, maybe it's time. I don't know what the Mozzie Smith status story is. You know, here was a kid from, I believe, East Kentwood in Grand Rapids who was really highly regarded, a big body, and just is not seeing the field at all. And I know he's only a sophomore, and I'm certainly not someone who writes people off, you know, whatever it is, three games, four games in your sophomore year. But not seeing him at all when you've got a real problem in the middle of the defense, you know, it's just not a great sign for the development of a player like that. So they've got to do – I don't know. At this point, I'm not even – I don't know about you, but I'm not even, like, thinking about, like, oh, how are they going to fix this? How are they going to get this all turned around? Like, I'm kind of just looking at this defense and going, they are what they are. Mm-hmm. And Wisconsin, next week Rutgers, Penn State in a couple of weeks, you know, down the road Ohio State. Like, this is what the defense is. If Michigan's going to have a chance to win five games, four games, they're going to have to do it with their offense.
Yeah. And yeah, there's no, like, okay, there's only a few changes need to be made for this defense to get back on track. No, it's a whole thing that has to be changed. And so in my head, obviously, this season is kind of lost for Michigan as far as being in the Big Ten race and beyond. So, in my head, it's you're now definitely playing for 2021. So, get whoever you think is going to be playing cornerback in 2021, start getting them the reps. And if it's got to be, you know, by committee to see who comes out, then so be it. And if they get beat sometimes, so be it. But you do have to start developing these guys and hoping that you get everybody some reps and see, get them to see some real game experience so that they can be in a position to compete in 2021. So I think it's the same.
Well, Justin, I think that's a great point. So at what point do you kind of throw in the towel for 2020? And it sounds like you're there. Mm-hmm. You know, I would say, I mean, I certainly don't think that they're going to win anything or accomplish anything in 2020. You know, even if they win this game, I mean, they'd have to run the table from here on out to be a factor. And even if they run the table from here on out, I don't think Ohio State, the way that Penn State's playing, I don't see a second loss on Ohio State's schedule because of, you know, some really crummy crossover games, Illinois and Nebraska. And so, you know, that's their only hope, and none of us have that type of hope. And so, you know, I think this, if you go out there, you put your best foot forward for this Wisconsin game, because if you don't, they're going to steamroll you. But other than that, I would look at the next three games, Rutgers, Penn State, and Maryland, and do exactly what you're talking about, playing for 2021. And if you do that in those next three games, Justin, then maybe you go into the Ohio State game and some of those younger players, the younger cornerbacks, the younger defensive linemen, you know, I think on the offensive side of the ball, which we can get to in a second here, it's a little bit different. Because a lot of those younger players are already seeing the field. But if you do that, maybe that gives you the best chance of being successful against Ohio State, repping those guys in the next couple of games. So, Justin, let's flip sides of the ball. But before we do, so I've been telling you about this, and I'm pretty excited because today is my test run. I'm headed over to Wolverine State Brewing Company. They are doing this sandwich contest where every week they're introducing a new sandwich just available on the weekends. You have to, you know, pick it up at the restaurant. You can dine in. They do have outdoor heaters still for you if you want to sit outside. Carry out is a great option. And so this week they are doing the Michael Spath sandwich. And I gave them the idea. It was like the chicken and waffle sandwich. So today I get to go and test it out and see what it's all about. I'll take some pictures, post it on social media. But really excited about this. And you know what? I told Nate, the chef and general manager over there, I said, look, man, if mine really takes off, then we got to give Justin his own sandwich, and because we'll just promote the hell out of it on the Stadium and Main podcast with him too. But really exciting. They've got a great beer selection right now. My wife, I was telling her, you know, she was asking me, like, what are you taking to lunch today? I'm like, oh, I got this with Nate today. She's like, well, you better bring me home some nachos and some sour beer. If you don't, don't try to walk in the far front door. So I got the message loud and clear. You know, I think nachos is going to be our dinner tonight. And That's a great pickup too on a Friday or Saturday night, especially at game day, because you know, you get the entire package. They give you the chips, the meat, whatever you want, chicken or pork. They give you the jalapenos, the red onions, all the cheese. It's a generous, generous portion. And then you just, you know, you throw it all together, whatever, you know, however you want to throw it all together. It gives you a little bit of flexibility. And it's outstanding nachos, man. Best in Ann Arbor, as Justin and I say. And so check out the menu at wolverinebeard.com. And yeah, I'll have some pictures of what this sandwich looks like, let you know how it tastes. And you can begin picking it up this weekend at Wolverine State Brewing Company in Ann Arbor.
Me and Jacqueline are going to be, we have some plans in Ann Arbor on Saturday morning. So maybe our lunch spot will have to be Wolverine on Saturday, so we can grab a few beers to kind of get some stocked up for the game on Saturday night and then try out your sandwich. So we'll have to stop by there for sure.
Well, you know, I had to do some sales goals this week for Kaepnick. You know, I've transitioned to Kaepnick Insurance Group, and so I had my 2021 forecast, and I set my forecast for new business at $80,000. And so I'm trying to bring in $80,000 in new business. And so for Wolverine State Brewing Company, the high mark, I believe so far, the number one sandwich that is sold has been 86 sandwiches. One of these weekend creations. And this was about 2 weeks ago. And so my goal, similar to like my high goal for sales in my first years, I'm setting a goal for 100 Michael Spath sandwiches to be sold this weekend, Justin.
I love it. I love it. Well, we'll have to be two of those. And so hopefully we can get you closer to that number there. So everyone, yeah, go check it out there at Wolverine. It's a great spot. Honestly, I love it. Even in the cold, it's still, the patio is pretty great. And inside is still, I know everyone wants to social distance and be careful, but inside is lovely too. I love the back room. That's where we always end up.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, let's go into the offense. And I had a specific question for you with the offense, because last week we did not see Joe Milton on the move much. He sat in the pocket, and
yeah,
I felt like he was a little bit handicapped by Josh Gattis and Jim Harbaugh. It's still up in the air who's really, really, truly calling the shots on offense. I don't think we'll ever know that for sure. But with a guy as mobile as Joe Milton is, it seems like he should be on the move at some point. And we saw that in the second half against Indiana, his best throws were when he scrambled and found a receiver on the run and in the move on the, you know, going from left to right or right to left. And so how do you think Josh Gattis should be using Joe Milton? Should he be having him on bootlegs? Should he be keeping him in the pocket on three-step drops like he has been? Or how is there something else that we aren't seeing from Joe Milton that you would like to see in this game?
God, I'd like to see the combination of the first three games all into one.
Mm-hmm.
What I liked about game one was I liked the fact that they used the edges of the offense. They threw the ball to the running backs. They threw the ball to Blake Gorham. They threw the ball to Chris Evans. They threw the ball to Ben Mason. Guys in motion where they got them outside on the edges of the defense and exploited that. So I want to see that from Joe Milton. I want to see in that game against Minnesota in the second half against Michigan State, they got back to running him where he, you know, a little bit of read option, but a lot of it is designed quarterback draws where they pull the guard and the backside guard in the center to get out in front of Joe Milton and pave the way. And we saw him have a big run against Minnesota and a pretty decent good sized run against Michigan State. So I want to see that as a runner. I want to see him as a threat in the read option, because otherwise, if all you're doing, and Michigan does this far too often for anybody's liking, is they have a play that looks like a read option, but it's entirely a designed handoff.
Mm-hmm.
And when you do this, the defensive end, you know, doesn't have to account for the quarterback at all. And so he can just attack, come on down. You know, Michigan tries to either pull a guy across to block him or just kind of, you know, the left tackle chips at him or the right tackle chips at him and then hopes that the running back is past him before he can make a play. And I don't get that. Like, use your quarterback who is capable as a runner. And then this third game that we saw against Indiana, we saw him as someone who could throw on the run and also had the ability to throw the ball deep. So we now know that Joe Milton has all of that in his arsenal. And yet in the first three games, we didn't see the complete package. We didn't see him do all those different things. We saw pieces here and there. And maybe part of that is the idea that, hey, he's still a, you know, three starts into his career. This is going to be his fourth, and we can't throw everything at him. But to me, Justin, if he's shown that he can do all four of those things, then you let him do all four of those things in one game. And frankly, if they don't utilize any one of those aspects, then they're just putting their offense, they're handicapping their offense and asking other parts of the offense to overcompensate. And that doesn't look good, because this running game, I mean, other than Joe Milton, how much hope do you have that this running game is going to figure itself out?
Yeah, about 0% confidence there. And the game of football right now in 2020, successful offenses really revolve around the RPO, especially in college football. And so the fact that we went into this season saying, oh, Shea Patterson ran the RPO pretty well, but he was never a threat to pull the ball and run because he just didn't like to pull it. He seemed a little scared whether he was banged up. You know, I think he was. But that was one thing that going into the season, we were saying we would love to see Joe Milton use that RPO, pull the ball sometimes, be a threat as a runner, and we haven't seen that. It does seem like what you said there with it's all designed. There's no actual option in the RPO for Joe Milton. He knows pre-snap exactly what he's going to do, whether he's going to give it, whether he's going to pull it or throw it. And so I would love to see them actually run an RPO where he – does read the defensive end and the linebackers and set and makes a decision by himself. And maybe Josh Gattis is saying Joe Milton's only in game three of his career. So we don't want to make him, have him making all those decisions right away. But at some point you got to get the training wheels off and let him do his thing. Cause I think he's one of those guys that's a baller, and you just got to get him the ball in space and let him do his thing. It reminds me of Devin Gardner sometimes and Denard, where it's just like these guys are so talented, where just get them the ball and let them do their things. It's kind of like I always say, it's like street ball. Like there's just some guys that are hoopers, and you don't really have to draw something up for them. You just let them go. And so he's one of those guys. And so I want
to
see.
Are you trying to make the transition to basketball talk by bringing up the stars on the court there?
It was a little hint there. You like that that segue for you?
I did. But before we get to basketball, you know what you said about the about the 2021, and if you're playing for 2021, and so Justin, if you are kind of playing for 2021 to some degree, and I know that coaches don't think like this, and it's, you know, if I'm Jim Harbaugh and I feel 100% confident that I'm calling the shots, which we all believe he is, and that if he wants to come back for 2021, then there's really no good reason not to start playing for that. And so in that respect, I would say, okay, let's just let Joe Milton, as you said, the RPO, the run pass option, let him kind of have the full gamut of the playbook and really kind of go through his maturation process. And if that means that he throws the ball 40 times a game and he has a couple of interceptions because he makes some poor mistakes or misjudgments, but he also throws for 350 and three touchdowns like he did a week ago, then so be it. Because if all you're really playing for is 2021, then what you have is this incredible opportunity to let this guy grow up and to learn from his mistakes and to really just hone his game this year in preparation for next season. And so I like the idea of giving him that full arsenal, and don't put any handcuffs on him. Just let him run this thing like it's his, because the leadership, the rallying, the huddle, all those different things he's going to gain in a season that, even if it's a throwaway season, he's going to gain all those intangibles and all those mental reps that are going to help him a year from now.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more, especially when you haven't seen any success in the run game anyways. So you might have to, whether you like it or not, throw the ball 40 times in this game, in any game now for the rest of the season, in order to have success on the offensive side of the ball. So why not let him loose and get him comfortable in those throws and see what happens? We've seen every team that's beaten Michigan this year, and we see it all over the place in college football. People teams win games on these big plays. They have 60-yard pass plays, and that is how they win these football games. It's not a pound the ball. You know, we're not watching teams like Army, you know, have 9-minute drives and just pound the ball all the way down and win football games. It's take a shot deep every so often, and not even every so often, but pretty often. And that's how you mm-hmm. win football games in college football in 2020. So if we don't see that from Michigan, I just feel like they're a step behind in the philosophy of what college football is in 2020. I wanted to ask you one more question on football before we get to basketball here. And that is the concerns of the penalties and the mistakes that are being made on the field. Do you see how does Michigan change those? Is it a coaching problem? Is it we really haven't seen the offsides be a problem before last week, so it's hard to say. But I know the one big thing that jumped out to me after watching last week and versus Michigan State is they get teams into a third and long situation, and then there's a penalty or they let up a long play and allow them to convert on third down. And so that has plagued them. And so that is one thing that I see as a concern for Michigan going forward. And I wanted to get your take on fixing those mistakes that can be fixed. You know, we talked earlier about sometimes it's just talent and you can't do a whole lot, but these are some mistakes that you can fix. And so do you see them fixing those moving forward and it helping out this defense and the offense too for the rest of the season?
Well, I think it depends on what type of penalties we're talking about. The jumping off sides, you know, the hard count that Michael Penix Jr. Employed for Indiana and the clapping and things like that. I mean, that was incredibly poor discipline, especially as I think Brock Huar, the color commentator pointed out, like if you're on the defensive line, just look at the ball, look at the ball and then attack instead of trying to, instead of ignoring the ball, because as soon as it moves, that's when you move. I think that was kind of one of those things where the one domino fell and then all of a sudden everybody started doing it. It's also when you're preoccupied with more things than just your job, because you're thinking, you're doing too much thinking, like, well, I got to do this and I got to do that. And so you're trying to get a head start on the play. So that can get fixed, I think, fairly quickly. The concern for me is in the defensive secondary, Vincent Gray, Jamon Green, and Brad Hawkins. I think all three of them have had at least two penalties called on them already this year. Vincent Gray, multiple ones, whether it's holding, whether it's pass interference, same with Jamon Green. And, you know, that's a confidence issue. When you are not fully confident in your technique and not fully confident in your ability to cover someone, that's when you start grabbing, that's when you start clutching downfield. Because Michigan does it at the line of scrimmage, and Michigan has always done it at the line of scrimmage. And that's part of Don Brown's game plan, and that's part of the game plan for Mike Zordich as a cornerbacks coach, is to get physical at the line of scrimmage. And so that's something they've always done. But getting physical when you're 10, 15, 20 yards downfield, that's a panic move. And so I don't know if that changes dramatically, because that comes down to the guy's confidence. So I think they're a little bit stuck. I think you'll continue to see penalties. And I think you'll probably continue to see penalties at bad opportunities. Jim Harbaugh has railed against the officiating the first couple of weeks here. Talking about how, like, you're calling stuff on my guys, they're not calling on the other guys. You know, he's trying to get into these officials' heads a little bit. Like, you've got to let my guys play a little bit downfield, because if you don't, we're in deep, deep trouble. And so I don't know. I don't know that the officials, they think that way, and they think, like, hey, we're going to start doing Jim Harbaugh and these defensive backs some favors by not calling this stuff. I think this is a cornerback and a secondary unit that's just kind of doomed to repeat these mistakes. And so, yeah, I would expect a couple of tough pass interference holding calls every single week against this Michigan secondary.
Well, it doesn't. Yeah, that doesn't help out Michigan, because there were a couple plays where I going back and looking at the film where everybody did their job in the secondary and everybody played it well. And it's third and nine, and it's an incomplete pass, but Vincent Gray or Brad Hawkins has a pass interference called on them, just because they're grabbing at the end of the play. And so when you do everything right except for the last second of the play, I think it's super frustrating for the entire defense and Don Brown especially, because it's like, we did everything to get that offense off the field, but you know, there's that one little grab that and now the drive continues and they are going to go down and score. So I think that's a struggle, and it just piles on the frustrations for that defense and for this team in general.
So Justin, one of the things that I love about our podcast and the opportunity that we have here is talking to some of my former sponsors and advertisers, and really when I think about Alex Milstein, that doesn't even do him justice. He's a friend of mine, the best real estate agent in Ann Arbor, bar none. You know, a couple of years ago, Amy and I were moving out of Ann Arbor. We moved to Royal Oak, and there's nobody I was going to call other than Alex. And you know, Alex gets a little, I mean, this is what he doesn't want to like sell this to everybody, like, hey, I'm going to do this for you. But we got $100,000 more than what I paid for the house. And, you know, we got above asking price, significantly above asking price. And that all comes down to the way that Alex Milstein negotiates and how he handles other agents and how he handles the marketing and everything about your home. And so we welcome to the State of Maine podcast, Alex Milstein. Alex, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me, Mike.
Well, Alex, crazy, weird year. I went off the radio in April, then came back in July, and then went off again for good. It was so tumultuous for me, a roller coaster. What was this past summer like for the real estate market?
Oh, boy. I get goosebumps just thinking about it, just because it's been such a crazy year. And I know it's been a crazy year for everybody. But for me, my business and the real estate market, it's definitely been a wild roller coaster. One of the things that happened, and, you know, I think we had talked on your radio show about this. I think I was on your radio show literally the week that we got shut down. I think mm-hmm. I was on there on Thursday, and on Friday I found out that we were shut down. One of the things that happened in March is, you know, the governor's executive orders pretty much stopped the real estate market. Real estate agents were not considered essential workers, so we had to shut down. And one of the things that occurred at that point is, you know, obviously, you know, we could do some things virtually, but the reality was that we couldn't do everything virtually. And, you know, I was able to sell a couple of houses virtually, but not the same number that I typically sell in the spring season. As you know, and I talk about this on your show on a regular basis, in the month of March, April, May, June are my biggest months. You know, that is, I prepare people for March and April and into May. To help them get the top dollar. And here we were about to take off. And right as we were about to take off, it crashed. Meaning I was at home just like everybody else. And so for about an 8-week period, we were not able to work. So that totally derailed whatever spring market we had. And during that time, I thought to myself, all right, this is doom and gloom. The real estate market is gonna crash and burn. I thought, you know, my own business, and we had a lot of these conversations, I totally thought my business was going to, I wasn't going to have much business. I didn't know what it was going to look like after everything was said and done. Clients who were in contract to buy a property started backing out because of this fear of what's going to happen. And so we were all in this predicament, and, you know, we didn't know what was going to occur once things opened up for us a little bit. And by middle of May, when we were able to get back to showing properties, it started off a little bit slow. It's almost like people came out and they started looking at properties, but nobody knew, like, what's the market going to do? That was the number one question. And at that point, I didn't know. And looking back, it's just been a crazy ride since then. It's been unbelievable in the regards that, you know, typically my busy season is March through June, maybe into early July. This year it started in May and I'm still going strong. Like, it has not slowed down one bit. I have made up for anything that I lost during the shutdown period of those 8 weeks that I didn't work. And the market has continued to be really strong through that period of time. We've seen price increases. We've seen the number of homes selling increased substantially. Those numbers, I mean, and I'm getting this information for the local Ann Arbor area. This is also Michigan and the entire country. I'm talking to realtors all over the country, and they're experiencing the same exact thing. So it's been a wild and crazy ride, Mike. Totally wild and crazy.
So, Alex, so normally this is the time of the year where you're kind of winding down, you're taking it easy, you're kind of making the recommendations for how to get people prepared for 2021. And so, you know, what is your advice right now? Should people be putting their house on the market right now? Should they be shutting down and working on things and then putting it back on the market come March next year? I mean, what advice would you give to someone who, at least at some point in the next maybe 6 months to a year, wants to sell their house?
So seasonality this year doesn't seem to be an issue. You know, here we are in, you know, almost middle of November, and it feels like we're in the summer market right now. And that has to do with the fact that we had very limited supply of homes all year round, and we still have a limited supply of homes. So the buyers who were in the market this summer are still, many of them are still looking at properties. So it really depends on what situation someone's in, whether they're ready and able to put their house in the market. And the other part is what work they need to do to get their house ready for the market. The one thing that I've learned over the last several months is that buyers are not going to be interested in houses that need work, primarily because they don't have the time to do the work. And the other big piece of it is it's really hard to get contractors right now to do the work to houses. And the other part is due to supply chain issues, contractors are having a really hard time getting materials. You know, I'm hearing even paint stores are running out of particular paints. So depending on the situation, I'm meeting with people, I'm talking to them about what needs to happen, how quickly they can get the work done. And it's no longer the seasonality of like, let's wait till, you know, April. As soon as you're ready, let's go on the market. And my feeling is this is going to continue all through this winter. I don't see it slowing down just because I think more and more people are now have now realized that they're going to be working from home for a long period of time. And most likely some of them will forever be working from home at least part time. So I'm finding it that, you know, if you're in a position where you need to get your house sold, let's look at your timeline. But no longer am I saying let's wait until spring. Eventually that's going to change. The market will return back to its normal cycles. But at this point, our cycles are out of whack.
So Alex, if I'm hearing you then, like any time is a good time to put your house on the market. But the second part of that, and really important, is don't have a fixer-upper. Don't have something that needs a lot of work because that's just not gonna sell, or at least sell at the rate that you want it to sell at. So your advice to people is reach out to you. Obviously, the one thing that I loved about you is you came through and you were all-inclusive. Hey, you know, this is what the things you need to do. You know, having the outside, just making it look nice outside, you know, a couple of things, maybe some painting, moving some furniture around. You're going to stage it a certain way. And so that's what I love about Alex, is that he's everything. You don't need to like hire multiple people. He'll do all of that for you. And then he'll market it extremely well. And you can find him at alexmi.com. And Alex, any other advice that you would give to people right now, just in terms of, you know, getting that house ready, or what, you know, what if the first thing they call you up and say, Alex, thinking about selling my house, what's the next thing you say to them?
So, I want to meet with you as quickly as I can. That's what I tell everybody. But the biggest part of it is today, getting everybody lined up to do work on your house is taking much longer because everybody's working on their houses because they're at home all the time. And the supply chain issue that I mentioned. So whereas before I could say, I have a painter and he'll be there tomorrow. I have a painter. It's going to take a while to get on a schedule, primarily because also due to COVID, he can't assemble a crew of 10 people and get it done in one day. They're very cautious about the way they're working, as well as trying to protect their clients and the clients' families. So it's going to take a whole lot longer now to get your house ready for the market than it used to. So it's no longer let's wait because all we have to do is just paint and some new flooring. Let's not wait. Let's get to work right away. Let's identify the issues. Let's get the stager in to identify what needs to happen to get your house ready for the market. And let's get to work on it as quickly as we can. So that they can ultimately get the highest return on their investment.
All right, great stuff. AlexMI.com, super easy website to find. And it's Alex@AlexMI.com for his email address. Alex, thank you so much. And I'm glad to hear that business is going really well for you. And I wish you the best of luck because, as I said, this is normally your downtime. And sounds like you're going to be very, very busy the next few weeks and next few months.
Definitely. The marathon has gained a couple more miles. So I've got my running shoes still on and I'll keep running it.
Thanks, Alex.
Thanks, Mike.
All right. Well, we've talked a lot of football, so let's get into basketball a little bit. We alluded to it earlier in the podcast with Juwan Howard landing some big five stars, and it looks like four of the five commits for Michigan in the 2021 class did sign on Wednesday, and so that is big news, especially with the whole thing with Isaiah Todd committing and then not signing and then going to the G League, which these guys, these five stars, can still go to the G League if they want to, but I think it is a pretty big deal that they did sign. And so the only player that did not sign, I believe, was Isaiah Barnes is expected to sign on Friday. So what do you think about Juwan Howard having the number one recruiting class in the nation by a big margin as well in just his second year at Michigan?
Well, I think there's technically six guys. There's six guys in the class, so which is a crazy number. Yeah, so which is fine, but I love it. I mean, look, one of the hopes with Juwan Howard was in today's college basketball where there's a lot more one and done than even ever before, and guys are leaving after their second year. And you know, John Beilein, for as much as he didn't want to have a program like that, that's the program that he kind of that Michigan evolved into with guys leaving after their second or third year. Some of them even after their first year, like Iggy Brustakas. You know, if you're going to win in college basketball today, it's not about necessarily having the most experienced team. It's about having some experience, but having, you know, elite talent. And so the hope was that Juwan Howard would be an elite recruiter. He's done it faster than I ever gave him, that I ever thought was possible. You know, if you're going to compete in the Big Ten, if you're going to compete in the ACC, you win with having a young, precocious talent that you can develop and make the most out of in their freshman and sophomore years before they're gone. And one of the hopes with Juwan Howard was, you know, his lack of head coaching bona fides, he'd be able to make up for in recruiting. And we saw that a year ago. He did, you know, land Isaiah Todd. Obviously, as you mentioned, Isaiah Todd never signed his letter of intent. He was rumored to be the front runner for Josh Christopher. And then, you know, that all kind of went down at the last minute. He went to Arizona State, but he showed that he could recruit a year ago. But to be at this level, to have the number one class in the Big Ten, and that exceeds all of my expectations so quickly. I mean, I thought it would take him 4 or 5 years to develop this type of recruiting acumen, and he's accomplished it in year two. You know, and so that is extremely exciting for this Michigan program and what they can be. And now all those guys, as you said, they need to get to college, and we'll see. And maybe some of them look around and say, well, you know, I'm the sixth guy. You know, there's only five guys that can start, and there's a couple guys in my position. You know, maybe I decide to transfer, but that's down the road. Right now, it's the excitement level. And if you go out there and have a good basketball season, which we expect Michigan to do, all those guys are excited about being at Michigan next year. And then you're building for the 2022 class. And, you know, it just kind of dominoes from there, right? It just kind of avalanches where Caleb Houston influences the next set of five stars in the 2022 class. So I'm geeked. I'm excited about this basketball season. I know that they're going to get started here in a couple of weeks. You know, Justin, to me, the crazy thing about this basketball season is how good the Big Ten is purported to be. I've seen Illinois ranked in the top five of most preseason predictions and as a national championship contender. I've seen Iowa. I've seen really high, you know, marks for Michigan State, for Indiana, for Purdue. I mean, CBS Sports did something the other day where they ranked the top, I think it was the top 100 teams in college basketball, and Michigan came in at number 30, and there were eight Big Ten teams ahead of them in the top 29. So if Michigan's the ninth best team and they're the 30th best team in college basketball, my goodness, this is going to be an extremely competitive conference season. in 2021, and which, you know, is probably going to make it where there's going to be some tough nights. But understand how strong top to bottom the Big Ten is this year.
Yeah, it is kind of crazy, and I think people are not too high on Michigan, I guess, this year. They're high on Michigan for the future, but I don't understand really why they wouldn't be high on them this year too. They return Isaiah Livers and Franz Wagner, and people are saying that Franz Wagner is going to end up being even a better player than Isaiah Livers in his senior season, and so that's a big deal if that's true. If Franz Wagner makes that big jump, I think that Michigan has a good chance to be, you know, a Big Ten title contender this year, even with the depth of the Big Ten. And so the big question mark for me with this Michigan basketball team this year is replacing Xavier Simpson. I know Xavier Simpson was not a, you know, he was not a shooter. He's not this great offensive point guard that Michigan has had with Trey Burke and Derek Walton and those guys. But he was as important as it gets for that Michigan team to be, you know, the glue together and be ran. He was a hell of a leader. And so does Mike Smith come in and do that? Does Eli Brooks make that transition to the point guard position? I think that it'll be a combination of the two, but it'll be interesting to see how those guys run this team and how Juwan Howard does this rotation, because we're talking about the 2021 class and how good it is, but people forget that the 2020 class was pretty dang good too. He signed a top 15 class right away in his first offseason or in his offseason before he even got here. So I think that's a big deal to have this 2021 class that is number one in the country on top of the class he had already signed. And that's here as freshmen. And so they're going to have some freshmen that play this year. And Hunter Dickinson, Austin Davis will be a fifth-year senior. So I think that he's got some tools to work with. And we'll find out what kind of an in-game coach Juwan Howard is. And I think that'll be the difference in this team being good and great. And so do you have anything else on the basketball team before we let it go for the day?
Well, I mean, you know, it's exciting that Shaun Day Brown, the transfer from Wake has been cleared. And I know that he's told the media that he's both practicing at the two and the three. There just seems to be a lot of versatility. Mike Smith is a point guard, big shoes to fill. Can he be more of a scorer if he's not quite the distributor or not quite the defensive player that Xavier Simpson was? I'm excited about that. As you mentioned, Eli Brooks and Zeb Jackson, both are versatile guys that will probably handle the rock a little bit and also play the two. To me, the question is you mentioned Franz Wagner. Can he become a more consistent three-point shooter? Because last year, he really struggled as a three-point shooter. And I don't have the numbers in front of me, but, you know, it was well below his expectations. But what he figured out late in the year was with his length and with his stride, he could get to the basket at will with the guys that were guarding him. And so he started doing that towards the end of the season. And that was, you know, now it's like if you have that and you have the ability to shoot the three and handle the rock, I mean, there's going to be a few people that can defend him. And if he turns out to be a 16, 18, 20-point scorer, Michigan is going to take off. I love what have we seen of Austin Davis, and what is his stamina? What is his level of conditioning? Can he quicken his feet down low in the post and be more of a post defender than he was a year ago? Step out when he needs to be. Where's Hunter Dickinson? I mean, you got to feel really, really strong about the 2-3-4 position for Michigan and Brandon Johns Jr., who we didn't even mention yet in his development. I mean, this is a team that is ascending, that is getting better. If they have the point guard play, if Mike Smith, Eli Brooks, some type of combination of that can really be the leader and can be a great defender, which we know that Eli Brooks already is. Yeah, I would say ninth is sandbagging them. I would say that they're, you know, a top five team in the Big Ten if that happens. And, you know, everybody's going to be picking off everybody. I wouldn't expect – I know they haven't released a schedule yet, but if they play 18 conference games or 20 conference games, I mean, I don't think the team that wins the Big Ten this year, even as good as Illinois is purported to be, I don't think that team wins with less than five losses on their conference schedule. So It should be a lot of fun. Michigan hockey gets going this weekend too. They got a couple games against Arizona State. They're both on TV, which I'm really looking forward to. It looks like the Big Ten Network's going to pick up a lot of the Michigan hockey games since fans can't be in the crowd. So that'll be great fun, great theater. They're supposed to be really good. I'm hoping to get Mel Pearson on the show here at some point, and we'll talk more hockey with him. But Justin, you know, even though this weekend is not necessarily, you know, as heart thumping, as heart pounding as Michigan fans are want it to be in week four, between basketball and hockey, lots to look forward to. And we'll see where this team is mentally. And we'll come back tomorrow and offer our predictions and supposed to hear from Ruben Riley. So looking forward to another football weekend. And thanks to our sponsors, too, Kapnick Insurance Group, Lewis Jewelers, Wolverine State Brewing Company, Weber's Hotel and Restaurant here in Ann Arbor. We are grateful and really appreciate all that they've done to help this podcast get launched here. Really enjoyed doing it. Hope that you guys are, too. If you want to make a small contribution, $9.99 a month, $4.99 a month, or 99 cents a month, we're using that money to pay our guests, Ruben Riley and Will Heininger. You can do so right on the official webpage there for Stadium and Main Podcast. So thanks everybody for listening. Tell your friends about us, like us on, like our podcast, and just let us know any feedback you want to see, anything you want us to cover going forward here. Thanks, Justin.
Absolutely. Yeah, we'll be back, like Mike said, tomorrow with our game predictions for the Wisconsin game, and back next week, of course, after the game as well for a game recap. So tune in to our next couple podcasts. You can follow us at Stadium Main Pod on Twitter and Michael Spath, ITH on Twitter for Mike, and then myself at JustinRowe92. So thank you guys for listening, and we will see you tomorrow.
This is the Stadium and Main Podcast, presented by Kapnick Insurance Group, Wolverine State Brewing Company, and Lewis Jewelers.